Welcome into another episode of the Bench Boys, and we're using Zoom this week because that's how cool we are. No, we're using Zoom this week because on tonight's episode, we've got an amazing guest with coming up. He's ESPN guy, Sirius XM guy, Athlon sports guy. Just he has many hats right now, and I mean it's a great interview. We were very lucky to get this guy, and very knowledgeable guy about all things football, so I don't know where I'm going to go with this.
It's okay.
Thomas,
it's
have
okay.
Anything to say?
It's a little different. It looks a little different. We had to adapt to his technology and his abilities on the computer.
His technology.
I mean, you know, we're flexible. We are adaptable, and I think that is a great message and analogy for what we're going through right now. I'm done pontificating. Listen, I'm glad you're listening in. Go ahead and hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, follow us on social media at the OG Bench Boys. I'm Thomas at Thomas Gleaton. You'll see my name pop up here in a little bit. The other guy is Colin. Follow him on Twitter at Colin Cahill 13. Yes. Right now I'm done. I really am done.
Yeah, we're done. So let's just get into the interview. On the show tonight, we've got
every night was a battle.
You can lock this in, take it to the bank.
No class at all. It's unbelievable.
They should see a relatively quick turnaround.
Show me the money.
Big water slide, snow cone truck and everything.
One team stands alone.
Well, you know what I think about Troy.
I'm losing my mind over here.
We've got the moment you've all been waiting for.
Of course.
And now we are joined in by Braden Gall from the Sirius XM, also ESPN Radio. He's coming in. Obviously, he writes, obviously, too, for Athlon Sports, and they just came out with a pretty in-depth top 25, a preseason top 25, and it went further than that as well. And I'm sure that has riled up the sports fans because that's what polls and that's what preseason polls do is just they're talkers. And so, first of all, Braden, thank you for joining the show tonight. We're really excited to have you on.
Oh, absolutely, guys. Pleasure to be here. And yeah, it's actually felt fairly normal the last couple of days. People yelling at me for my football takes and not for all my other opinions. So it's actually a welcome, warm sewer bath of Twitter nonsense that makes me feel all warm and fuzzy when somebody thinks Notre Dame or Tennessee or Penn State is ranked appropriately or inappropriately. So,
what is the biggest thing when you guys put a poll out? Is there – You mentioned Notre Dame and Tennessee. Are those the big fan bases that are just like appalled by where their teams end up at every year? Or
no, all of them. I hate all your teams. We hate all your teams at Athlon. That is our official corporate culture. Is that we hate all of your teams. Notre Dame's a big one though, but I think it's mostly because old people don't understand that Notre Dame doesn't get any more benefits of the doubt. They maybe used to in the 80s and 90s, but they don't really anymore. We rank them at number 9 in our poll, for example, because they finish in the top 10 every year. Like, we don't, they're a good football team. They got a star quarterback coming back. They got 5 offensive linemen. They got a good coach. Like, I mean, I don't call us crazy, but they keep landing in the top 10 every year, so we keep putting them there. They're not overrated. They're not going to win any championships anytime soon, but they're a pretty good football team. So Notre Dame's always a big one. Georgia, Florida this year, a lot of debate between those two fan bases because we picked Florida over Georgia, and they're both right next to each other at 6 and 7. Tennessee didn't make the top 25, and because they're recruiting well, people think they belong in the top 25. So Vols fans are pretty worked up, but basically everybody, we hate your team.
I feel like Tennessee, with all of the, the hype they've had, they've got this like hype train going on, right? And you kind of alluded to it with the recruiting. Like, it's like, oh, we're automatically a playoff team now because we're getting 5 stars that aren't going to be here until next year. Like, it's just like, I don't know, it's puzzling sometimes. So, all right.
It's better to get the recruits than not, but it has no bearing on whether or not Jeremy Pruitt can be BYU or not.
Do they play at BYU this year?
No, but they got to play at Oklahoma, even better.
Oh god. the big thing, so we're obviously, people that are tuning into us, they know we're a G5 podcast, and it's particularly in the Sun Belt, but G5 over the last probably 5 years, and I'd love to get your opinion of of the have you seen a big jump in the G5 and maybe not just one or two teams, but maybe is that, do you see the depth being a little bit better now? Is that, and we're seeing three teams in you guys' preseason top 25 already. Is that kind of what you guys are seeing out of the G5?
That's an interesting question. I think it's hard to argue that the, you know, if you want to use the mid-major term instead of G5, which is sort of like the smoothed over version of mid-major. It is different. I mean, I think the, you know, when the Big East was at its peak with Rutgers and West Virginia and Louisville and these really good programs, the Mountain West was at its peak with, you know, Utah and TCU doing amazing things and Boise State. Like, it's hard to argue that it's better now or even the last couple of years than it was then, if you're going to count those programs, because all those programs have now elevated into the Power Five and now have Power Five budgets and resources. And so it's hard to say that it's better maybe the last couple of years, especially with those teams making the jump and sort of leaving the G5 ranks. But I would say that since then, it's sort of progressively gotten better. And it's because you saw the other wave of realignment that nobody really talks about, which is Conference USA changing, you know, all these App State joining up, coming up a level. You know, that's a good program. And so you're starting to see those programs start to take some footing. And so I do think it's starting to replenish itself. There's a ton of coaching talent, whether it's, you know, whatever flavor you want, right? If it's a guy who used to coach in the Power Five, if it's an old dude who's been in the G5 for 15 years, or if it's a rising star. So you kind of have a little bit of everything. I would say it's getting better. The AAC has clearly made a push to become the best of that group for a long time now, but it's hard to argue that it wasn't better than it was, you know, right before realignment, when you had, you know, really good programs, Louisville, West Virginia, TCU, Utah. You know, these are really good programs. They're good enough to make a big jump, and they were pretty good in the quote unquote mid-major levels.
You know, you talked about the AAC. Obviously, last year they were far and ahead, as you said, one of the better, if not the best, G5 conference. And this year we're seeing two teams already in there. You guys kind of, we talked earlier, said hedge your bet. You know, you almost threw Memphis in there. What about those three programs kind of made you guys, you know, I mean, put them ahead of, you know, the Tennessees of the world? And I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are asking the same question for that.
So our ranking, first of all, our ranking is a projection of the postseason. So we're trying to shoot for what the end of the college football season will look like. And so I think it's a small caveat to our rankings. It's not a preseason power ranking. I don't think that, you know, we've got Cincinnati at 21, UCF at 22, and Boise State at 23. Tennessee's at 26. I think Tennessee, if they played 10 times against Memphis, would probably win more than half. I think they would win more than half against UCF. So, you know, do I think Tennessee's a better football team? You know, I think Baylor is not in our top 25, is probably a better football team than some of those teams. In a one-game situation, can Memphis beat Tennessee or Boise State beat, I don't know, Florida State at home, for example? Absolutely. They're totally good enough. I don't think that they're going to play schedules that are comparable. So it's really, you know, I know it's a debate that we've had for, you know, essentially forever.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, the week in and week out grind of a Power Five schedule, especially for depth and the line of scrimmage, is just never going to be the same, even if the AAC is the best. So we have those three in the top 25 because we think very highly of all three of them. And we think they're going to be in that 10-11. I mean, Boise State is just an automatic 10-win team. So Cincinnati, picking them as the highest G5 team this year, it's almost sort of a tip of the cap to the growth and the progress they've made sort of in the big picture under Luke Fickell, that they're going to be, you know, a pretty good football team. Offensively, they had some injuries last year. They should be healthier this year. If they do, they're going to be really dangerous. UCF offensively is just ridiculously fun to watch. So I think you can make a case for all three of them. And because all three of them are basically even, it's not really a power ranking. It's sort of where are you going to finish. You look at number 20, Minnesota, right ahead of those teams. And, you know, I think Minnesota is a team that could challenge for a Big Ten championship game appearance. I think that team is obviously probably better. So I think that's kind of why we settled on 21, 22, 23 in that range, is because we think very highly of them. But I don't think they're, you know, top 15, top 20 good. And Memphis at 28 is also very, very good. They need to be lumped into that group as well.
I was about to ask, first you mentioned Minnesota. they had that huge run last year, so it wouldn't surprise me to see them do it again. But you talked about Memphis, and you said they were right just outside. And looking through your article, the list pretty much reflects the same thing. They're right there, 1, 2, and 3. What is it that kept Memphis from being right there in the top 25?
So, I mean, obviously, really good quarterback. You start there in the G5, and if you got one of those guys, they go a lot further than in the Power 5. Let's just, and everything goes further in the Group of 5, right? I mean, if you've got a star running back, if you've got a star quarterback, if you've got a star head coach, it all influences the game more in the Group of 5 than it does the Power 5. You need, you know, like a third string outside linebacker is what could decide a game between Alabama and Clemson, right? That's not going to be the deciding factor, you know, in Conference USA. It's going to be who's the superstar, who's the best coach. And while they've got great talent and they've got a good quarterback, it's really hard to find, and Memphis fans will tell you this, obviously, as if you look at their history and their track record, it's not all that great for most of my lifetime, 40 years. And it's hard to find one guy to bring a program into sort of relevancy the way Justin Fuente did. Yep. It's really hard to find a second guy to do that. And they did that in Mike Norvell, who probably stuck around for a number of reasons. It's really, really, really hard to find a third guy. And while I understand continuity, App State's doing it as well, hiring for continuity, I get that at any level. It's just really hard. Luke Fickell's, you know, a guy that's probably going to get plucked by the Power 5 at this point next year. And, you know, who knows? I'm not sold 100% on Josh Heupel, but he's done a pretty damn good job so far. Mm-hmm. And Boise State is just lock and load. I mean, plug and play. So I just think without Mike Norvell around, I think it's about the coach. And that doesn't go for just G5. I mean, Washington would be a team we probably have in the top 25, but they're like 34th because Chris Peterson retired. So I think head coach is, it means that much. And the AAC schedule is it's not easy. I mean, that's a much tougher schedule than probably some of the other G5 leagues for sure.
Yeah, we definitely saw that. I mean, from the Troy perspective of having Neil Brown for the last 3 years, and you see what he did, and they took a step back with Chip Lindsey coming in. So the in the Sun Belt, we're seeing that. And Arkansas State comes to mind too, with kind of what they did back in the early 2010s, when I mean they had Brian Harsin come through there, and they kept having not necessarily the degree of what Boise State has been doing, but the whole continuity of being able to hire coach after coach after coach and finding them. That's very tough. My question for you was directed more about when we were talking about Minnesota and the top 20, and what does a G5 team, the biggest question that we've done episodes on it, what is a G5 team? I mean, we saw UCF literally go undefeated for 2 years in a row. What do they finally have to do? Is there a possibility right now for a G5 team in your mind or in your opinion to ever make a playoff? I mean, is it even fathomable at this point, even after seeing a team go literally 24-0 in two consecutive seasons? And being, I mean, they were an attractive team. I feel like they're in Orlando. They got a good market. They're a big school. You know, what does a team have to do in order to impress a playoff committee, in your opinion, to that comes out of the G5?
Play 10 Power 5 opponents. I mean, I'm sorry. Listen, this is one of those times where two things can be true. And I say this all the time about a lot of things. And one of them is that I really love Group of 5 football. I love all football. I love FCS football. I love, you know, high school football. I will watch. You give me two, you know, quality teams playing at a pretty decent level, offensively or defensively, I'm going to watch it, and I think it's great. I love the coaching staffs in the G5 level. I think so many of them learn what they're doing and then take it to the next level. Some of them stay there forever and just win a boatload of games, like Frank Solich at Ohio. So, you know, I love Group of 5 football. I think it is great football. It is not the same game as playing in the Big Ten East or the SEC West or any other division where you have to go week in, week out, grind it out against teams that have $100 million plus athletic department budgets for their football team. And it's just not the same sport. And it's every single coach I've talked to for 20 years has said the same thing. They all say it's just about depth and it's about talent. Boise State can beat Oklahoma on a crazy Statue of Liberty play, and it is an awesome moment. I remember where I was when I watched it. I was rooting for Boise State. TCU, probably the best G5 team, if you want to call it that, of all time. I think it was 2014 with Dalton.
Yep.
And Tank Carter and yeah, I think Jerry Hughes might have been on that team too. They beat Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl, went undefeated. Yep. Probably the best, you know, non-Power 5 team ever. I don't know if that team could go 8 games in the Big 10, 9 games in the Big 12, 9 games in the Pac-12, week in, week out, and be perfect. I mean, half those teams, hell, Boise State couldn't, you know, they miss a field goal against, you know, Nevada, and they don't go to a big bowl game. And, you know, what are they going to do when they got to play Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State, Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska? Like, you just can't – it's just not the same, unfortunately. So I don't think a team can earn its way to the playoff without having that level of schedule. And Houston tried it a couple years ago, and look what happened. They couldn't get – couldn't beat Tulane, you know?
So. Yeah. By the end of the season, they were just, like limping into – like, limping throughout the end of the season, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just always – that is the always thing to talk about in the G5 is what do we have to do? And that – unfortunately, you hit it right on the head. It's just the fact that the schedules will never be able to line up, you know, every – you know, I guess comparable-wise ever. And that's the tough thing. And maybe a playoff expansion. I'm not even going to get into that because we don't have enough time to talk about playoff expansion in this. But let's get back on track here. Just you guys did kind of a top 10 G5 coaches that you liked. What kind of went into creating that list? Obviously, we talked a little bit about Luke Fickell to start. I think he's going to be shortlist number one probably going into next year, or heck, maybe even through the middle of the season. How did you guys kind of develop that list?
Well, it's my personal list, and it, like I said, it's what I love about the Group of Five is the diversity of coaches. I mean, you have so many different guys, and you know, this list would have had Lane Kiffin on it last year, a guy that's been a head coach in the NFL, the youngest of all time, left on a tarmac at USC, got, you know, Vols fans literally went into a decade-long spiral after he left, you know, one night. It's those types of story. I mean, Todd Graham is not a particularly nice fellow, but he's a pretty decent football coach, and now he's back in the G5, and he's got a chance to win some games at Hawaii. So there's a lot of those guys. I think there's 20-plus coaches in the Group of Five that have been that have Power Five experience, and so there's a lot of those guys. I mean, Hugh Freeze is at the top of the list. I'm not necessarily saying I would put my job on the line to hire him, but I think the dude can coach football and he's going to win games. I mean, do what you will with all the other stuff, but, you know, the guy can coach football. And there's a lot of – so there's those guys. And then there's the rising stars, the guys that I really like, the, you know, Lance Leipold, who's a little bit older, but he's at Buffalo. I think Will Healy at Charlotte's really, really good. You know, I think Blake Anderson at Arkansas State, along with Billy Napier at Louisiana, are both really good guys, good coaches that are going to kind of rise up through the ranks as far as G5. So you've got kind of the younger rising stars that are cutting their teeth in the Group of Five, which is the traditional path to a Power Five job. You've got all these retreads that are been around forever and used to coaching the Power Five. You got Willie Taggart back in the, you know, back now in the G5. So there's so many guys that are in that have been at Power Five schools, and the list is, frankly, very, very long. Jim McElwain, Steve Adazio was a pretty good hire for Colorado State. Mm-hmm. You know, Butch Davis is a guy I worked with for a long time, and he's just kind of cruising down there at FIU. Yeah. Dana Holger, I mean, Holgo, like, there's a lot of those guys. And then there's the quote-unquote lifers, which you're not really sure if they're going to ever make the jump or if they ever want to. And that's, you know, Kenny Montalolo at Navy comes to mind, Troy Calhoun at Air Force, Jeff Munkin at Army. Those are, of course, the three military academies, Solich at Ohio. You know, Skip Holtz has coached a lot of football games and has won a lot of football games. And I'm not sure he ever wants to go up a notch. Willie Fritz at Tulane is a guy that I really like. So what's cool about the coaching ranks in the G5 is it's kind of whatever you want. My list would probably start with Hugh Freeze just because he's beaten Alabama. He's won at a high level. He knows how to recruit legally or illegally, whatever you want to call it. Luke Fickell's right there. Brian Harsin, I think, is at the top of the list, but I think it's going to take a perfect offer to get him away from his alma mater. I love Bill Clark at UAB. I would hire Bill Clark at UAB over almost everybody on this list. I think Will Healy's probably a little young. He needs to probably another year or two of seasoning, but I would not be surprised if, like, let's say, for example, Will Muschamp got axed at South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised. You know, if I was Ray Tanner, I would go after Will Healy at Charlotte. I think he's proven that. I love Lance Leipold at Buffalo, probably the best coach in the MAC right now. A little bit older, won a boatload of games at UW-Whitewater. Willie Fritz, I mentioned him. Craig Bull at Wyoming, and then the two guys in the Sun Belt, Napier and Anderson. So there's a lot of really good guys, and you can kind of pick your flavor. Do you want older, more established with Power 5 experience? Do you want rising star? Take a risk. That's the direction I tend to lean, is if you're going to hire somebody, you know, go with a little risk-reward, especially if you're a middle-of-the-pack Power 5 program. If you're Alabama, maybe you need something more stable than that. But yeah, there's a lot to like there, and there's a lot of good coaches right now.
Speaking out of Power 5 experience there, are there any Group of 5 coaches that have made the transition that, for better or for worse, have just kind of surprised you in how they performed at that next level, so to speak?
I don't think Justin Wilcox coached. I'm trying to do this off the top of my head now. I think he was the DC at Washington, right? And he was the DC under Boise State, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't think he counts, but he was kind of the first name that popped in my head. I should have taken some notes before this. Okay. You know, Gus Malzahn's a guy that people rip on all the time, but like, I think, you know, I think Auburn fans are silly. So Gus is, how many people have beaten Nick Saban and won his division twice? Coach O's done it once and Gus has done it twice. So, I mean, Gus is a guy who came through Arkansas State, obviously, after the Springdale 5 got him to Fayetteville. There's a lot, like, Neil Brown, I think, is a good coach. I really like the fit at West Virginia from a culture standpoint. I think that's the job he did recruiting in that territory, you know, hitting Mississippi and the Panhandle and Texas and Louisiana. I think he did a great job recruiting at Troy, and I think he's going to be a good cultural fit, kind of an aw shucks guy at West Virginia. I think he fits the personality of that program, so I like him a lot. There's a lot of guys that you can mention. I'm sure I'm leaving off like 20 dudes.
Yeah.
Like I said, Lane Kiffin just did it, right? I mean, Lane Kiffin just rebounded.
I feel like he's the only guy to fail upward. The definition failing upward, I think that's him. Like, I think that's Lane Kiffin in a nutshell.
Yeah. Yeah. And I probably should mention, like, the two names I probably should start with are now that I think about it, are Gary Patterson and Kyle Whittingham. They just didn't take different jobs, right? At TCU and Utah. I think Kyle Whittingham's, you know, top 7, 8, 10 coach in the entire country. And I think that's how good he is. You know, Utah's going to lose everything this year, and keep an eye on them. They're still going to be good. So I those are two guys that cut their teeth in the G5 or mid-major, whatever you want to call it, won a boatload of games, built programs, and were so good at their jobs that they didn't just leave to take Power 5 jobs. They brought their entire programs with them. So, I think that's interesting. You know, Mario Cristobal, you talk about failing upward. You know, his tenure in G5 wasn't exactly all that great, and all of a sudden now he's, you know, he knows what he's doing. So they're doing really good stuff there. So it's – I think Whittingham and Patterson are unique in what they've accomplished. But otherwise, you look around, and a lot of these guys were either coordinators or, position coaches that became, you know, Coach O and Dabo Swinney were position coaches. Yeah. You know? So I don't know. Norvell at Florida State's going to be interesting to watch. Brian Kelly's a really good example. I count him as a, you know, in the top 10 or whatever, top 15. And that's a guy that really developed. I think Chris Kleeman's going to do good things at Kansas State. So that's a culture guy, not really a G5, but close, you know, even lower. So there's a lot of those guys. Matt Wells at Texas Tech, we'll see what he does. My favorite, Matt Campbell at Iowa State. I love Matt Campbell.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that one later. So the obviously the big thing here is the big talk right now is if football will happen. We've done episodes in the past on that, but the COVID, you know, it's affected literally everything. And for you guys at Athlon, when you guys are doing, I mean, every year you come out with a spread, you come out with I mean, an entire ranking of every single team. What is the difference now of getting, you know, on your, in your magazine? We'll talk about that a little bit. You know, what do you guys have to do now? How are you getting your information, you know, during the middle of this pandemic, basically? Has it changed at all of how you guys are doing that?
Yeah, like this. No, it is funny because we're the only magazine of all the magazines that are dwindling quickly on the newsstand that actually has writers in every location. I mean, we don't pretend to think that we should be writing every team story. You know, our small staff of guys, men and women, we should not be. You know, we want the West Virginia story written by a West Virginia beat writer who's going to practice, who lives in Morgantown and covers the beat. And so we've had that business model for as long as I've ever known. There's other magazines that do it other ways. Yeah. And that's cool if you're into that or gambling. But we're about trying to cover the team. And so we go out to every location, and normally we talk like, we will collect information from November until we go to press mid-April every year, just constantly. And generally, we're getting we set up you know, what we think, what we kind of feel is a loose list of a top 25 or a top 130 even, kind of before we start getting stories in. And then as we collect stories from our writers who've been at spring practice, who've gone to camps, who've talked to coaches, who've done all the interviews, and know the rosters and the depth charts and the position battles, we kind of let those stories. We don't let them change our minds exactly, but we're using that as information to try to make a better decision. And not a single one of these guys have been to practice. So
I know.
It's very different in that sense. And again, while all these coaches are little feudal dictators that control the flow of information, you don't really learn a whole lot in spring practice. I get all that. Being around a facility, talking to other writers that are covering the team, that you can glean a little information like, hey, this position battle, they feel pretty secure about the left guard, or they feel they're worried about the corner. Like, you can kind of gain some of that by just being around a program during practice without actually seeing it even. And that's stuff that nobody has. We don't have it. You know, big companies don't have it. Nobody's got it. Opponents, coaches, staff don't have it. Nobody's got it because nobody did it. So it's definitely a little bit more flying blind than we would like to be, but hell, that makes it fun. It just, you know, I mean, 2020 is going to be different, y'all. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, we've already, I think, touched on, I mean, last week, we literally spent 40 minutes last week just thinking about how a football game can be played, just knowing the logistics of what it takes to put one on. And we weren't even talking about fans in the stands. We were talking literally just putting two teams in a stadium and what it takes. And we kept thinking of new things to be like, oh, crap, they have to do that. Like, as we were talking, I mean, it's just, yeah, everything's going to be different. No doubt. Thomas, did you have something that you want to say at all?
No, I'm pretty good with that. I think the only thing that won't be different is that you will still be able to find the Athlon magazine on shelves. Am I right?
That is exactly right. And in the middle of all this crazy nonsense, you can still go buy a magazine, athlonsports.com, and you can still tweet me all the things you hate about it, and I will love every second of it because it'll make me feel normal again for just a little bit, and I appreciate that. But you're right about, I mean, I've talked to a lot of coaches and ADs, and I don't think any of them think they're playing football unless there are people on campuses going to classes and in the stands, even if it's a small number of people. But again, you got to test kids every day. You're going to have to test staff, medical people, trainers. You have to test them all every day. And think about how much that time takes, how much it costs. You're talking $1,000 a pop, probably, roughly. I think The Athletic reported that. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, one football program could cost you a couple $100,000 just to run and diagnose tests. And you got to do that like every week. So I don't know. I mean, I'm optimistic, but we'll just leave it at that.
That was like our episode that will also air after this week. We're going to be talking about, we hit on a couple of the programs that already canceled, you know, not the only football program that was canceled was in a Division II, you know, down in Florida Tech. They were the only Division II team in the entire state of Florida there's actually two, but they were one of two. And so they just said, look, we just can't deal with all the expenses that come with just logistically traveling people. It just can't. And, you know, that was going to be my last question for you was, do you think we'll see group of five teams? Do you like where it'll come down to you got 100 guys, and we're going to have to cut costs someplace. And do you think it's going to come down to something like that?
Well, I mean, the Max already told us, right? It's the baseball tournament. It's the tennis tournament. It's the bowling tournament. That's where we're going to try to save costs first. And after that, it's going to be a lot of other things. I think we get wrapped around the axle a lot on this with the money for the G5. And I think there is so much money in college football, especially in the television contracts for the playoff. If you wanted to just on the next TV deal, when you do expand to 8, which I'm not a fan of, but they're going to do it. And when they do expand to 8, if you just want to say like, hey, this TV contract's worth $22 billion, just slice off one of those and make sure that one B goes to the G5, and you could pay for all of them. So yep. As long as you earmark some money for the group of five, I think you can make it work. There's a lot of money to be made from Alabama playing Ohio State every year or Clemson. And there's a way to make some of that trickle down to people. Unfortunately, that's not exactly a economic theory that's ever been proven to be successful.
Yeah. So. Well, I think that was the big thing with the basketball tournament. The basketball tournament was the big funder for the G5 team, for the G5 athletic programs. Right. And when that went out the window, that's when all the G5s were, I think that's when they kind of got screwed. They got screwed well ahead of the Power Fives did, because that's where their big profit was coming in. So, well, dude, you keep making polls. You keep coming out with amazing content on Athlon Sports. And that gives us plenty of content to talk about as well, because we're the G5 guys. We are the little brothers of everybody, and we love being that little brother and the underdog. So, but Braden, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. We had a blast just hearing from you, and hopefully, you know, maybe if during the season we can get you back on again, and maybe we can be talking about some upsets from some of these smaller schools. You know, there's a lot of good matches this year, so.
Oh yeah, you can go even deeper. North Dakota State at Oregon, week 1.
Ooh.
I'll just keep making all the polls, man. It's all good.
Oh yeah, I North Dakota State. The reason why we talked a little bit about Matt Campbell. So I grew up an Iowa fan. So North Dakota State, they hold a special place in my heart for some things. So I wouldn't mind seeing another upset from the Bison.
As does Northern Iowa, I'm sure as well.
yeah. Well, thank you so much, Braden, for coming on. We enjoyed it, and thank you again.
Yeah, of course, guys. Anytime. Always a pleasure.
I mean, awesome interview. The guy, we were talking with him before, and the guy is just a wealth of knowledge. I mean, you have to have a wealth of knowledge when you cover as many teams as they cover, obviously. And I love, they have to cover, I mean, he's on Sirius XM. He's on ESPN Radio. They've got to cover the big dogs. Yeah. And so for him to be able to just spit names.
Dude, he
and no
Boise State guys, and I'm gonna be honest, I wasn't taking notes either.
I know Justin Wilcox, like I know that name.
Yeah.
I'm not like familiar with him, but I know of that name. And but like, yeah, like what you're saying is like, oh, I didn't you know come with my notes. I'm like, dude, we don't either. Like, we just kind of wing it every now and then, like what we're doing right now.
But I feel like we could have sat and talked with him for hours easily.
Dude,
just about all this.
That is a guy that I'll give you like a little backstory. I started listening to him 4 or 5 years ago on Sirius XM and just love the fact that they could talk about the big guys, but then they also, I mean, they do, like, you can tell, I mean, they research the hell out of every team, and I love what they're doing. You know, when we asked them about how do they get all this coverage of teams, I mean, they have the people there. I mean, that's something pretty cool about Athlon, that they've got people on the ground and, but I mean, for him to have all that wealth of knowledge and be able to just hang and everything, that was awesome to be able to do. While you're there, Athlon Sports Magazine, their top 25 is out. I don't think the full mag is out yet.
No, it usually comes out in late May, early June. It comes out before some of the other competition does, because I remember having it before Phil Steele last year. And I got both of them last year. I'm probably gonna go get Athlon again this year. You should too. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he said something about giving you trash talking him on Twitter at Braden Gall. I can't say his name for the life of me. At Braden Gall on Twitter.
They've also got a sweet podcast over there with Athlon Sports on the Cover 2 podcast. So if you're not listening to us, go listen to the Cover 2 pod.
So get to the end of this one, then go to listen to that.
Yeah. And, you know, we've got another episode airing this week as well. Right. So it's a double. It's a twofer. That's how good a week we're having. This episode was great. We're glad that we got to have him on. I loved hearing his takes on, you know, the question. And the question I always have is, will a G5 team ever make the playoff? And I mean, he hit it on the head. I mean, the schedules. I mean, even when you look at what UCF did those 2 years, and you go and you stack their schedule up against the next 12 teams or the top 12 teams, their schedule still wasn't there. Like, and so, I mean, that's always going to be
the point. As much as we love our group of five teams, and I'm wearing a Troy hat right now. Like, I'm not going to deny my, yeah, exactly. You got to be realistic at some point. And I really have to agree. And until we're playing that sort of caliber, any team is playing that sort of caliber team week in and week out, I don't know if it's going to happen, but
he did say, you know, he wasn't a fan of the expansion, and I wanted to bite, but I was like, oh, we don't have enough time.
That makes two of us. I really did. And I was this close to being like, yeah, man, I'll come after y'all on Twitter. But like, as much as I disagree with him, whatever he disagrees with me on in that regard, I can't disagree with his logic and his answer to that question.
Not at all. So, great episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. It was fun getting to hang with him. I'm hoping that we get to have him on again, maybe later on. Hopefully we do have football here. Obviously our episode this week, we're going to be talking about that again, because that is all that anyone is talking about right now, is will we be able to have football? We kind of broke that down last week, but make sure you guys tune into our next episode that will be airing this week as well. So make sure you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. We're on YouTube now. We're using Zoom. We're using Skype. We can use it all, man. Like, that's like we are adaptable. Like how he said it early on, we are adaptable. So yeah, hit the follow, hit the subscribe at Thomas Galition on Twitter at Colin Cahill.
Should show up right there. There it is.
Right there at Colin Cahill 13. We're going to put it there. And so just give us a follow, and we're glad you guys tuned in again. And hope everything is going well for you. So come on back.